This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Don't sweat the technique.
Razor Blunt Commentary, delivered with a special purpose.
What's happening to my special purpose?
It's the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5.
It's the Killer Bees here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank. So the Texans have had their last 3 days of practice, and CJ Stroud has been out there with the ones the entire time. They officially announced that on Thursday night's first preseason game, CJ Stroud will start. They have not named officially QB1 for the entire 2023 season, but I think it's over.
Well, I mean, we've said this all along. It doesn't matter when. It's not an if. It's going to happen. And to me, the bigger thing is to make sure that he's ready when you do make him the starter, the full-time starter. And until then, there's nothing wrong with, especially in the preseason, letting other guys take reps and take hits because of the hit you took this weekend that might put some things in a little less of a stellar light for you and your exuberance to get the right guy out there as a starter. Let's wait till opening night, and then and also let's make sure we make the right call at the right time, because you don't want him getting his head ripped off. CJ Stroud is your starter. It doesn't matter if he starts in the preseason or not, and he will in this game. He will be your starter in week one. And he should be. And he's your future franchise quarterback. He deserves every opportunity, just like you gave Davis Mills last year, but you're doing it with a higher regard for the quarterback as being the guy that can be the guy.
Yeah, and look, we talked about this extensively, but he's gonna learn more. He's going to learn more on the job than he is off the field. Because this isn't, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. This isn't, even last year, you know, we talked about Brock Purdy a little bit, having 12 games last year to learn the offense in San Francisco. Well, the plan was never for him to play. You win the last season with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. Like, that was it. That's your quarterback competition done over. And then Brock Purdy emerges after injuries and plays great. This is not Green Bay with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, or Dak Prescott with Tony Romo. Like, this is just not that situation.
Montana and Steve Young?
No. Exactly.
Yeah, like, I mean,
it's just not that. He has to play he has to fail. Like, failure is a good thing. People, like, that might sound weird to some people, but CJ Stroud, the more he fails, the better off he is.
Yeah, there's so many ways to look at this. I don't mind him getting on the job training and struggling. I do mind him doing on the job training and getting pounded. You know, I don't want him taking undue punishment that he doesn't deserve, because we've seen it and been through it with David Carr, right? I mean, that's what I want to avoid. And I think that's what the Texans wanted to avoid. And I think that's why they did all the things they did to try and solidify their line. Now, if I was to anticipate where there might be a breakdown and letdown in the offensive line that might hurt him, I'm looking at Kenyon Green and I'm looking at Juice Scruggs. I'm not expecting it to be Titus Howard.
Well, the problem is Titus Howard is not your right tackle anymore. George Fant is going to be the starting right tackle for the Houston Texans for the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. because Titus Howard is in a cast today. DeMeco Ryan says that Titus hurt his hand. Reports are from, I think, Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport that it's broken. And, you know, that's not great. You've now lost Questenberry. You've lost Titus Howard for the foreseeable future. Hopefully it's not the entire season. But now you're going to, before the season, it was Tunsil, Green, Questenberry, or Scruggs. If Scruggs played well enough, he'd be the center. You know, Shaq Mason and Titus Howard. Mm-hmm. Well, now you're for sure starting Juice Scruggs at center, and your right tackle is going to be George Fant, because Charlie Heck is hurt too. So, like, you don't even have a guy who's been like a solid swing tackle for you for the last 2 years since you took him out of North Carolina. And now you're with this other guy who signed off the street. Like, it's kind of just where you're at.
It's a bummer.
Like, it's a huge bummer.
It's a blow. It's It's not something that you wanted, needed, or expected when you were looking at how they really tried to reconstruct and solidify this offensive line. And it's something that you're going to have to monitor very closely because, I mean, thank God it's not the left tackle spot because then you're really putting your quarterback in danger. But you do want to avoid what I described in terms of first year, you're already expecting that he's going to take his lumps and that, you know, the track record says that most first-year starting rookie quarterbacks don't succeed and a lot goes wrong. That's fine if you make mistakes. It's fine if you throw picks and you're trying to work things out. It's not so fine if you take hits that become career-threatening kinds of injuries and also the mental side of it like we saw with Carr that I hope they try and avoid.
I think that's the only reason, though, Joe,
that's the only reason why you don't rush him in to be the starter if you have too many uncertainties on the line.
I think they're going to be okay without Titus to avoid that part of the issue. So DJ Bienemy Saturday was tweeting out as they were going through like this live practice that they had, the scrimmage that they had. And one thing that he's been tweeting constantly and tracking is how basically every single time CJ's throwing the ball, all of his throws have been 3 seconds or less. So they're getting the ball out super fast. And that to me is the first line of where there's a big difference between David Carr, Deshaun Watson, and CJ Stroud. What was Deshaun Watson's biggest flaw as a quarterback for the Houston Texans? He took too many unnecessary sacks.
He held on to the ball too long. He extended plays too long, and then he took too many unnecessary hits.
And it was all his fault for the most part. Like, even though the offensive line wasn't good, Deshaun never did himself any advantage. He was always a disadvantage the way he played the quarterback position because he wanted the big chunk play. He didn't want to take the easy stuff. He couldn't find the easy stuff. Where CJ Stroud, all the reports are to camp is that they're getting the ball, bing, bang, boom, out of there. That's the first thing you can do to counteract what you're talking about, Joel, of losing these guys and protecting your quarterback.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I think that that's smart by Slowik and the offensive minds that are coaching this football team, and I'm not sure that they would have gotten the same kind of coaching in years past. That's a coaching group that understands the importance of not only keeping C.J. Stroud upright, but keeping him both mentally and physically, to your point earlier, in the right frame of mind and of well-being and sound mind and body to be able to learn, to be able to pick things up, to be able to get on the job hands-on training.
Sure.
You have to be accounted for by being on the field and doing the things we want to see him do. And you want to avoid the mistakes of the past this organization has made when it comes to quarterbacks. So it's something that they got to keep an eye on as much as I like the fact that they're getting closer to it, but without making it official that, you know, starting in the first preseason game basically is the precursor to telling the world he's our starter week one. But you also want to monitor that because of the offensive line and make sure that you're not rushing him in, even if he maybe looks ready, when you know that he might put him in a very compromised position with the kind of protection he's getting. So even if he gets 3 seconds or less, he might have guys all over him.
You're right, but to me, it's just the world that we live in. Like, it's you have two options. You either play him and you put him in a compromised position potentially some of the times, or you don't play football. Because if the plan is to wait for everything to be perfect, then you're going to wait for Titus Howard to get back, but then someone else is going to get hurt. Like, it's, you know, to be successful in the NFL, like, you have to overcome these obstacles and figure out. I mean, look at Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is probably the best example. As much of a joke the Texans franchise are right now, they're in the same exact position that Cincinnati Bengals are or were when Joe Burrow was drafted. Yes, they had T. Higgins already, but besides that, like, what did they have? They had bad ownership. They had a bad defense. They had a joke of an offensive line that cost Joe Burrow his rookie season or most of it. And Joe Burrow has had to adapt. You know, Patrick Mahomes, they've had different pieces in offensive line consistently changing out, letting guys go, and just not worried about, you know, our quarterback can fix our problems. And that's what CJ Stroud has to learn how to do. Like, yeah, he has to see these obstacles and he has to overcome
them. Here's the bad example that you bring up when you bring up Burrow. Because, you know, in the first year,
he got hurt.
Yeah, he got crushed. And there was a lot of people that thought that might be career altering.
Yeah, you're right. But, like,
I don't want to take that risk with CJ Stroud.
But how do you not take it?
Well, I think,
like, do you wait till next year so in theory the offensive line's better?
Well, I don't think he's out for the whole year, for one. And I've seen offensive linemen play with that kind of big ball cast on.
Yeah, that
where
you could see that at some point.
Yeah, you can't hold, but you can, you know, you have enough skill that you can put your big body out there and be a better blocker than the guys behind you. To where I don't think it's going to be season ending, So I don't think that it's something that you can't put C.J. Stroud out there at the right time. But until the situation looks like it gives him the best chance to succeed line-wise,
sure,
I'm gonna caution every.
So like, let me ask you a question: like, if Titus Howard were to miss 7 weeks, and then Laremy Tunsil will get hurt in week 6, would you just continue not playing C.J.?
It depends on how C.J.'s playing, for one. And if the 3 seconds and getting it out of his hand quickly is still working,
yeah,
then that's one thing. But if there's breakdowns with communication and being able to, you know, slide over and help guys when certain rushes and certain audibles and blitz packages come in, I'm definitely rethinking the decision of how often I'm going to put him out there, especially since I don't expect this team to win all that much anywhere to where wins are going to be important. My bigger concern is keeping that dude right for the long term.
Yeah, but I just, it's always going to be a problem. Like, it's even if it's, you know, even if you wait now,
more experience, it's not always going to be a problem.
But how is he going to get more experience if he's not playing?
I mean, there's plenty of reps in practice when you can't touch him. And again, you monitor the situation. If you are truly running that Shanahan type offense where the ball is out of his hands quickly, yeah, where there's guys in motion, where there's enough to keep the defense occupied to where they can't just pin their ears back and crush him, should be out there. But if he starts taking some blows early, especially if you just kind of barely escape what looked like something that could be serious, I don't want him out there in that situation, because this season isn't as important as keeping that dude right for the long haul.
I hear what you're saying, but to me, like, that, those questions are always going to be there. So, like, he's got to learn somehow to play with a bad offensive line. Like, it's not always going to be perfect. So, like,
I get it, but you say that those questions are always going to be there, but they can be less of a question when you have above average NFL offensive linemen blocking for you, when you have a better receiver room, when you have, you know, all the options in front of him.
Yeah.
You're setting him up to almost fail if you put him out there healthy with an offensive line that can change that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you definitely are. Like, the Texans are not setting C.J. Stroud up for the most success that he can have. But that's just, if you're not the Kansas City Chiefs, or the Green Bay Packers, or the Dallas Cowboys, like, and with, you know, Mahomes, Prescott, and Aaron Rodgers, like, that's always what these guys are into. So, like, in a perfect world, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to take a guess here. If you had your way, you would not play rookie quarterbacks that are drafted high. Because all rookie quarterbacks are in the same situation.
No. I think there's scenarios where I'm fine playing a rookie quarterback. I mean, the Niners situation is an anomaly. You don't expect to have...
Yeah, I almost don't count those.
Yeah, because you have like a Super Bowl caliber roster.
Like top 10 picks are always on jokes of rosters.
But when you look at what Aikman had to endure his first year, when he got crushed, I referenced Carr. You know, a lot of the guys, when you bring them in and you know the rest of the roster is kind of unstable, that's where I'm concerned about it. If you bring them into a team, which obviously most teams that are drafting and having their opportunity to get a player of your caliber,
yeah, they're not in that position.
They're not there, but they haven't. You know, they have position groups that are good. So if your offensive line is good or your receiving group is good, now especially it's one or the other. If your line isn't good like Cincinnati, but you had skill position players that could play, if you're getting the ball out within 3 seconds or less, and the quarterback's following the game plan like Deshaun didn't do, Then I'm more okay with it. Because I know you're right. He does have to get game reps and get game speed and learn on the fly, making mistakes and having things work out. I just don't want to put him in a situation where he can put his health at risk.
Yeah, no, I definitely get it. I just, when I look at what's going to happen this season, his health's going to be at risk. And that's part of learning to play the quarterback position in the NFL. Like, he has to, especially for a guy like CJ. You know, CJ has talked about how he didn't run much because he didn't have to. You don't have to run when you're playing Rutgers and Northwestern. You have to run when you're playing Georgia, because for the first time you're playing competition that's guarding Marvin Harrison Jr. effectively. You know, a team that has NFL talent on the other side of the ball. You're not playing Illinois. Like, you're playing real competition for the first time. He's Joel Blank. I am Joe George. What does the fallout from Titus Howard mean, being hurt, mean for the Houston Texans? We hit on that next year. We got Mailbag Monday coming up in 15 minutes. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. If you want in, you have to audition.
Hi, I'm Carrie Dubick, and I'm reading for the role of Man at Party Who Smells Fart.
Razor Blunt Commentary, delivered with a special purpose.
What's happening to my special purpose.
It's the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5.
It's Joe and Joel today. Jeremy should be back tomorrow on the show. Todd, the show is here on Twitch, says Joe George is trying to be optimistic about Ohio State quarterbacks. Yep.
Why in the world would you do that?
Well, here's the thing. I think Todd and others who think CJ is just going to suck because he went to Ohio State are, I don't agree with that philosophy. I get it. Dwayne Haskins, you know, I guess Troy Smith, if you want to put him in that category. Cardale Jones wasn't any good. Like, Ohio State quarterbacks,
what's the guy that they turned into a receiver here?
Braxton Miller.
Miller, yeah.
Like, Ohio State quarterbacks haven't panned out. I totally get it. But if that's your only reason for why you think C.J. Stroud is going to be a failure, I have a simple question for you. What did you want to wait for? Because if you want to use that Ohio State argument, you can't just use it for Ohio State. Because name me the last good starting quarterback that came from USC. It's Carson Palmer. Matt Leinart, bust. Sam Darnold, bust. Most USC quarterbacks are a bust. You want to wait for Quinn Ewers?
I think there's a kid from SC Texas coming sucks. Out next year okay, that might cool. be pretty good.
From North Carolina?
No, Caleb Williams.
Yeah, but the thing is like if C.J. Stroud is like if your main thing is like you don't like Ohio State quarterbacks, and that's like now I get it. That's not
well. Then you'd have to go to Mayo guy.
If it just you can't
and go use, to Will Levis just to make Jeremy
and,
happy.
And I'm not even saying like Todd is saying this, but like there are a lot of people that believe that like the reason why C.J. Stroud is going to be a failure is because Ohio State quarterbacks fail. And the thing is, so do USC quarterbacks, so do North Carolina,
Alabama for the most part.
Like exactly, like Alabama's on a hot streak. I just think it's a flawed way to look at it.
You can't count Jalen Hurts for the most part.
I don't really know what category he falls into.
Right, but other than that, when you look at all the different guys at Alabama that got to the NFL and didn't do anything, and we're still trying to find out what Tua is.
Yeah, Tua, Mac Jones, like it looks better now.
Bryce it's getting Young. A little better, sure, but it's not stellar.
Yeah, but I just don't think looking at a position from, say, this guy from this school, you know what the exception is? Sure. Offensive linemen from Iowa are usually pretty good.
I'm sorry?
Offensive linemen from Iowa,
Wisconsin are normally pretty good. Yeah.
Offensive linemen from the Big Ten are pretty good.
But everybody to me is their own entity and their own situation. So, right? So, I'm judging each guy individually on their skill set and what they can and can't do. Sure, the system matters because it's getting them acclimated. But at the same time, if you look at a kid, no matter how bad the track record is at Ohio State, and I've always said the best quarterback to ever go to Ohio State was Joe Burrow because he also got out in time to play at a school where you could capitalize on your talents. Mm-hmm. Who you're being coached by, the system you're running, it all matters.
It does.
But I don't think it's fair to say if you are a quarterback from this school, you're never going to succeed. Because you can say to Georgia, for all the success they've had and everything like that, Matt Stafford might be the best quarterback of all time with Stetson Bennett and all the different guys that you know we remember that were first or second round or teetering you know picks that never panned out. But that shouldn't be on Georgia. That should be on each individual kid.
Yeah, part of it with the Ohio State thing versus the other schools, it is the system. But most of the arguments for that system, the only guy you can really talk about in comparison to C.J. Stroud is Justin Fields. Because they play under Ryan Day. Like, the other quarterbacks were for Urban Meyer. Now, I know Ryan Day came up through the Urban Meyer system, but it's still two separate coaches. Now, Dwayne Haskins was overdrafted. Braxton Miller was a wide receiver his last year at Ohio State. Cardale Jones was a late draft pick. Terrell Pryor was the Tressel era. So was Troy Smith. So I get most of them fail, but you just can't use that as your main argument because then, like, how can you draft Drake May? Like, you're going to hold Mitch Trubisky against Drake May? That's not fair to Drake May.
Or the kid that's going to start for Washington this year.
Yeah, like, it's a flawed argument to say this quarterback from this school is going to fail. If C.J. Stroud fails, it's because he can't do certain things in the NFL. It's not because he went to Ohio State.
Right. I mean, I look at Wisconsin's quarterbacks over the years, and everybody rightfully could say that they've always had hot garbage at quarterback. You know how many of those quarterbacks ended up having longtime careers as backups in the NFL?
Yeah.
Like, there's five or six guys that have 10-year NFL careers that you never could have predicted by how they played in college.
Exactly.
So it's unfair to tag a kid because of the college and the system that he played for. It's more fair to say, this is the individual, and this is the skill set and the traits he brings to the table. This is why I think he will succeed or fail.
Yeah.
And it's a case-by-case basis.
And no one thought that when Jalen Hurts came out of college, no matter where you credit him with playing and where he represented, it was more about the skill set he brought to the table and how much he could polish his shortcomings. He polished them. He perfected them. And he's become one hell of a quarterback. I don't give Oklahoma or Alabama credit for that. I give Jalen Hurts credit for that.
Yeah, so it's not that. It's just that C.J. Stroud might not be the quarterback that the Texans fans are hoping he's going to be. Just if he fails, just because he's coming from Ohio State, it's just they're just not correlated.
It's you're right, because each draft is a crapshoot, but it is its own specific set of circumstances. You look at other years, you weren't looking for a quarterback, and quarterbacks were there. This year and last year, you were looking for a quarterback. Last year, you decided there weren't any worth taking. This year, you decided that, hey, of the guys that are on the board and the urgency we have for a quarterback, we feel this guy brings enough to the table that he's worth taking with the pick that we have and taking a shot. Now, does that mean that it's a surefire lockdown that he's going to succeed? No. But it doesn't mean because he went to Ohio State he's going to fail? Absolutely not.
I do think it's going to – but now with that, to where I think there are points about the only part of this Ohio State thing that I would agree with and kind of connecting these last two segments is that the reasons why I think C.J. Stroud will struggle early on in the NFL is because – that offensive system is so quarterback friendly, and the talent he had was so elite. Like, think about the guys that he's throwing to: Marvin Harrison Jr., yeah. Garrett Wilson.
It's the Alabama,
Chris Olave.
The Alabama Ohio State conversation is always centered around the fact that it's their hard.
Guys
to,
are so open.
It's hard to evaluate quarterbacks from those programs because their receivers are so elite, and there's so many of them that they are getting unfair distances of separation between them and the nearest defender that you're just not going to get on the next level.
Yeah, and that's the biggest adjustment, is that it's not one read and go. You know, now but there are also major differences, and this is where sometimes the argument's flawed. Like, if you go back and watch Ohio State film between C.J. Stroud versus Justin Fields, it is the same offense, but it's also very different. Justin Fields was very limited in what he could do in college in terms of reads. It was one read and run. If his first guy wasn't there, Justin Fields took off and went for it. C.J. Stroud, the reason why he didn't run as much was because he could read the field better, way better than Justin Fields can. And like, that's where I view C.J. going into the season. I think his floor is higher than most of the quarterbacks he was drafted with this year. Like, I think at a minimum, C.J. Stroud can be an accurate passer who can move the chains a little bit at a time. Like, he can be a game manager. I don't know if C.J. Stroud can always make those big
chunk plays. I think the upside's higher than that. But I think,
no, I'm saying the floor is low.
Yeah, it might even be lower than that.
Like, it's a high floor. Like, he can be a solid quarterback move the ball. Can he be a good enough quarterback to win you Super Bowls in the AFC? That's a question that we just don't know the answer to.
But we know that the numbers aren't stacked for you. They're stacked against you because of who else you're playing against and who has a chance to be in your conference to win one every year, and that is the Mahomes and the Burrow and the Herbert, and, you know, the list is endless. There's a lot of guys. That's why we said in this conference, you can't just be drafting for a franchise quarterback that's top 15. It's got to be a guy that can compete with the top 5 to 6 guys in the league.
Yeah, but that's why I was still okay with it, that they did the quarterback thing when they did, because I really think that the way the Texans were headed, I think the McNair family was tired of having those top picks, and if the Texans would have just not taken C.J. Stroud and just taken Will Anderson at 2 and rolled into the season with Davis Mills, I think they're going to win just enough games to push them outside of the draft for next year. I think they would have won like 5 games.
I think that if they had just taken Will Anderson, we'd have the conversation about them being in line for either Drake May or Caleb Williams next year.
I think they just would have won. I want to think you're right.
Because Davis Mills is that bad.
In theory, yes. But they just enough games to where you're just going to miss your first or second pick. Like, I'm not saying they're going to be good. They won 3 games last year with CJ. I mean, with Davis Mills last year. To think that they're not going to improve by 1 or 2 games, and like, it's just like worst case scenario.
But the rest of the league got better too, Joe.
But other teams fall behind.
Aside from Arizona looking like they might be the absolute rock bottom of the league, I don't know that there's any clear-cut number 2 for worst record, and I think that had the Texans just stood pat and taken Will Anderson, they'd be right in that conversation for one of those 2 quarterbacks or one of those top 2 spots.
Agreed, but their schedule was so easy that it just – I think you have to take the quarterback like they did when they had the opportunity. Because if you just happen to win four or five games and get lucky and you end up with the third pick, you're just back in that same position where you're not in that position to draft a quarterback in 2024. So that's why I think they made the right decision. Will CJ have a great year this year? I don't know.
But here's the thing, Joe, to your point. I think that when you look at these quarterbacks too, you don't want to label anybody a game manager. But the system and the talent around you matters, right? Mahomes is who he is, one, because he's got unbelievable ability, but two, because for his first years in the league, he had an all-world tight end.
Yeah.
He had an unbelievable game changer in the Cheetah. He had good supporting cast and a really good offensive line. But on that same token, you can take guys that might not have the same kind of guys around them, but it's what the system demands that you be. There might be a system where it's more... It's Brock Purdy a year ago in the Shanahan system. You're not expected to be anything other than a game manager because there's so much talent around you.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you're the Jets a year ago and you're thrusting a kid into an environment where suddenly they're all expecting to win and Zach Wilson ain't ready, it could be you're a product of the system around you, and the system around you expected too much for a kid that had too much to learn.
Yeah, it's always – quarterbacks are such a wild card of what they're going to be. Because, like, no one would have thought, even though the 49ers system is so easy to learn, it seems, and they have so much talent, no one thought Brock Purdy would go out there and be better than Trey Lance. Mm-mm. Like, it's impossible. Like, to think, when you go back and look at Josh Allen versus Sam Darnold and these old arguments, like, there's a chance that Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud are not the best quarterback from this class. Like,
the other thing that you have to keep in mind is something we talked about last week, is the fact that if you're Cal McNair and the Texans, you're tired of everything when your name comes up being negative. And the fact that if you take your swing and miss and CJ doesn't pan out, but the early returns are, you did what you were supposed to do. You went and got a quarterback to take a shot that he can be the quarterback. And at the same time, you fired up your fan base. You got them excited. And now everybody's talking about, you got the right coach. You took a chance on a quarterback.
Yeah.
You're adding young talent. And now it's all win-win-win positives about what's going on with this team, as opposed to the black cloud that made me think Houston Texans, Deshaun Watson, Jack Easterby, Bill O'Brien, suck, suck, suck. I hate it. Now I'm excited to see what they can be.
Yeah, I am absolutely
excited. As an owner, that affects the bottom line, and that's one of the reasons why you get involved.
Watching the Texans this year is going to be a much more enjoyable experience, even if they don't win as many games as some are hoping that I think they potentially will this year, which is still like six or seven. It's not a lot. It's just going to be a much more enjoyable experience overall. All right, what questions do you have for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Mailbag Monday is next.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it down in my plums. You're getting a nice bluish hue.
You've got mail.
It's Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
Something's in the bag.
What's in the bag?
Oh, what's in the box?
It's Mailbag Monday here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 on the Killer Bees. Joe George filling in for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank. Send your questions in 713-780-3776 to the text line, or you can call in twitch.tv/ESPN975 as well. Montrose Mike, who would win in a fight, Tim Anderson or Jose Bautista?
Wow.
I'm going to go Bautista.
Just for the weight advantage?
Yeah.
Size and muscle matter?
I think Tim Anderson's got a glass jaw.
Well, he sure does.
It looks like you hit him once, he's going down.
Yeah, that was not a very good look. That's why I had to keep rewinding it. I thought it was an open hand at best. And then I looked again. I'm like, ooh, maybe he just couldn't take a punch.
Snapback or fitted from 1970?
Oh, easy fitted.
Yeah, I'm a fitted guy for the most part.
Flex fit are good, too.
Yeah, if I go snapback, I typically... Most snapbacks I would wear backwards.
I don't like wearing the snapback backwards. It's a bad look.
I'm bald now. So you can see my baldness typically on a snapback. So I try to avoid
975 hair, Joe.
.com?
Yeah, 975hair.com.
Yeah, I know. I need to get to it. Would the Astros be interested in Gene Segura for depth? We're one Dubon injury away from seeing more Kessinger, I guess.
I mean, look, I was a big, big proponent of the Astros, and Jeremy and I were both on board with it. I had kind of lobbied for him. That's a guy that I'd like to see on the Astros bench. That's a guy that could have filled your Diaz role at the start of the year, and then you didn't know Dubon was going to be who he was. But there's a guy that is a really good contact hitter that's hit 300 in this league. That's a steady fielder when you play him at short or at second. That could be, and if you don't, you know, it's like Trey Mancini. Get these two guys and send them to Sugarland, and they could be the next versions of John Singleton. Forget about options and all this other stuff. If they have a chance to play on a playoff caliber roster, and all they got to do is go down to AAA and hit the show, they can hit the baseball. You're not giving up any prospects to go get them. Take a shot.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Like, I'm good with what the Astros' depth is right now for the most part. Obviously, if you lose Dubon, that stinks. I mean, Justin Verlander loses his personal center fielder. You lose your Pena and Altuve guy to give them days off. But you have Bly Madris. You have David Hensley. Ooh. Like, those are bad options, but I don't know how much worse options they are. Those are than, like, Segura.
Yeah, I mean, again, if it's no risk, but there's a chance for reward,
sure,
I'm fine kicking the tires. I just don't need them giving up prospects and things to go get guys now that we're past the trade deadline. If there are guys floating out there and you want to give them a look-see, go get them.
There's just a lot of randomness in the Twitch chat about the fight this weekend. But did you waste your time watching Nick Diaz versus one of the Paul brothers?
Nate Diaz.
I saw the
highlight. I can't even get the Diaz brother right. Diaz versus Jake Paul.
To me, the biggest takeaway was there is obviously a portion of the UFC fighters that just never got true boxing technical stuff down. From Paul's perspective, the one thing that, as much as people rightfully so in a lot of ways want to point a finger and call him out and say, you're not the boxer you think you are, and your opponents really, you know, suck. He has learned the sweet science enough to where
he's solid.
He understands how to fight. Now, is he a professional fighter worthy of fighting against top prospects and top ranked guys in boxing? I don't think so. But I think the combination of who you're fighting and the fact that you've worked enough to understand the fight game, he has an advantage.
I just want to watch him fight someone that's not a dinosaur, washed-up UFC fighter or another YouTube star.
But you know what I'd like to see?
He's beating Nate Diaz, Anderson Silva. Like, fight someone that, like, matters.
He did, and then he lost.
Yeah, like, he's fought one professional boxer.
Yeah, and he lost.
Like, I just don't... I'll tell you this.
Here's the other thing. Take the gloves off. Put them in a cage against someone his own size that has, like, UFC experience, and see what he can do.
Yeah, but that's not what he wants to do. He claims he's going to be a world champion by 2026.
He can claim that all he wants.
I'll tell you what, though. Of the Paul brothers that are going into different sports, Jake is not the one who's a superstar. I know I might be the only one in this room that watches it. Logan Paul, that dude can hang in the WWE. He is a bona fide superstar.
So he's a great actor?
Yeah, but he's a super athlete. Like, he's actually legitimately very good at that.
So that excites you?
I like the WWE. What's wrong with it?
You going to get a t-shirt?
Not a Logan Paul t-shirt. I still think it kind of sucks, but he's very good at it.
You like wearing tights?
I don't wear the tights.
Okay. I thought tights...
You don't like WWE?
No.
What's wrong with it?
It's acting. It's fake.
Yeah, duh.
Okay, I don't understand the passion that people deliver towards wrestling.
What's the difference between...
know how fake it is?
Because it's just like...
So this is like, instead of going to a movie, you'd rather just watch WWE?
Not instead of a movie, but like, it's just like watching...
But it's all acting, right?
Yeah. No, but I'm not, like, I'm just saying, like, movie ahead of, like, wrestling, but it's just wrestling. Like, it's entertainment. It's World Wrestling Entertainment. It's not a serious thing. I'm not one of the people that think it's still real. Those people are lame.
I'm not a fan.
It's like reality television. Jeremy and I watched...
Oh, I know what you guys
mean. Terrible reality television. Wrestling's the same thing.
And you get
thing.
Hooked into it.
It's the same
that
thing.
That whole Vanderpump thing that you guys watch.
Yeah, we're still... Me and my wife are still...
So weird.
We got start bench cut here from 12-9-6. Cleveland LeBron, Miami LeBron, LA LeBron. Which Cleveland LeBron?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about that this morning from the standpoint of a different discussion that I was having with some buddies, but Cleveland LeBron both times was really good. Cleveland LeBron carried a team early on to a finals that had no business being in the finals without LeBron James. He was single-handedly the reason why they were there, and then they got swept. But then Cleveland LeBron with Kyrie did what no one thought they could do, and they dethroned the Warriors when the Warriors were the best team in basketball. So Cleveland LeBron, to me, hands down, is the best LeBron because he had so much help in Miami, it's unbelievable. And now he's down. He's still good, but he's not nearly the player in L.A.
Yeah, I think cut is easy L.A. LeBron. Yeah. I would start Miami because I think that even though he had obviously great talent around him, that's when he was at his absolute best. Like he could do anything he wanted on the court, from any spot and dominate the game of basketball. It didn't matter if Wade and Bosch were out there. He was so unstoppable. He was so good.
Yeah, I'm gonna start Cleveland LeBron. I'm gonna sit Miami LeBron, and I'm going to bench, throw out, cut
LA.
Yeah,
LA LeBron's fine. Like he's been an okay player. And he's still been like a really great player at times. Yeah. He's just not as consistently good as some of the other ones. Here's my question for Mailbag Monday from 4624. Is Jeremy at the Hollywood writer strike with a picket sign? No.
I think he might be at the local drive-thru with a picket sign because they're not serving his French fries right.
8327, Joel, I don't think anybody actually believe it's real. LOL, come on now.
What, the wrestling?
Yeah.
No, but that's why I've known it's fake for a long time. Yeah, that's just why I choose not to watch.
It's just no different than like just television. Like I think that's how I view it. It's just television.
But a lot of people think that whether it's the reunion shows or the actual shows themselves as they're kind of playing out, that's life. That's real.
Oh,
as opposed to scripted.
That's a good question.
Drama.
Do you think more people think that the WWE is real or that like reality television's real?
More people think reality TV is real.
Yeah. I think people are like, I think we're past the point where people think that WWE is scripted. Like everyone knows that unless you're a kid. And that's almost like, I always hate doing this. It's like the red guy around Christmas. What people know about him. I'm always scared of like who's listening.
That's a good point.
Like I don't want Joel's kids to be listening, just like ruin their life.
You have a kid too, by the way.
I know, but he's only two.
He's smart enough not to listen.
Yeah, my wife doesn't listen to me, so she doesn't care.
Well, I don't mine either.
She doesn't like sports.
They went to the 10 a.m. Barbie showing this morning.
Oh, you got out of that one though.
Oh, yes, I did.
That's good for you.
Yeah.
But I think more people believe that like reality television is real and not scripted. Like more people believe the Jersey Shore was real than WWE.
To echo that. More people were extremely, and I mean extremely, upset when they found out Cheaters was scripted.
People didn't think that was scripted?
No. Like, I knew people because of our TV crew for the Rockets that worked on that show, and then the new people that worked on that show. People looked forward to that Cheaters show and were just like, ooh. And then, like, you want to talk about spoiler alert, like, biggest bubble in the world burst? Yeah. Tell someone that watched Cheaters and got into it that it was fake. They would fight you, and then when they found out we weren't lying, oh my god, it was devastating.
The only shows I have like are I think there's the gray, there's like a blurred line, is the competition shows. Like Survivor, there's real money on the line.
Yeah.
I think they intentionally get them to keep certain like villains on the show longer, but there is a certain point on Survivor where it's not scripted.
I think that's right.
Because, like, you have, like, unless they're scripting who gets the money, which I don't think they're doing.
I don't think so either.
I just think they kind of force you to keep certain bad guys on the show so the show stays better.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, the one guy that always comes to mind on Survivor is Richard.
Oh, yeah.
But they wanted him around because he was great TV. He was must-see TV if you were a Survivor fan. Kind of like the real world. When Puck went
Yeah.
Puck is an all-time villain. I think Puck had a lot of scripting where they chose the most villainous things that he did and used them in a montage just to make him look like the dude that everybody loved to hate.
Yeah. All right. The Hall of Fame inductions were this weekend. CBS Sports says Andre Johnson is the number one player that's not in the Hall of Fame that should be in the Hall of Fame. What's your ETA for an Andre Johnson Hall of Fame arrival? That's next year on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, I was just telling Joe, go to 975hair.com. You can find out all the information to do what you didn't think was possible. Get your hair back, and it is your own hair. It is not the sprays and the creams and the foams that only mask the problem. You don't have to sit there and have a hard conversation with yourself about, do I shave my head? Do I get a rug? Do I try and cover it up? What do I do? You get your hair back by using your own hair. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. It's a fact. I've seen the studies. I know where the progress has been made, and I know how it works. At the same time, Doc Linville's office is not only explain that kind of stuff to you, but they're going to explain how they can take that hair that's never going to go away, take some of it and put it where you need it most. Maybe it's up on top. Maybe it's in the front on your hairline. But the bottom line is it's going to be your own hair. You're going to get it back. It's going to grow and get stronger and longer. And eventually, it is going to be with you for the long haul. And 95 to 99% of the follicles that they move are going to stay and grow.
they're not going to go away. And that's what really won me over. That's why I did it. And you can too. As a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. You get it free, and you can make a no-obligation decision on whether you think it's right for you. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, sign up for the appointment, ask questions, get answers, talk to Doc Linville's office, and find out if you're the next in line to really reap the benefits of the NeoGraft procedure. I know he's the best in the business. I had him do my procedure. Could not be happier. You should check it out and see if you might be right to do it, too. Tell him I sent you by, because I can't stop telling everybody about how great his office is and the job they did. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5.com. Take his pork chop.
I don't want his pork chop. I want his life.
Hey, Houston. You're live in the Hive with the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So George filling in for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank, John Bellmer behind the glass with us today. You guys can find us on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel, at Joe George Radio, at Third Coast Johnny. So the Hall of Fame inductions were this weekend, Joel.
Indeed.
And
rodents were in the area.
Andre Johnson. Jesus Christ. Andre Johnson.
You religious guy?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not really. All right. One of our leftover mailbag Monday came in late here. Shipley's or Krispy Kreme? What a stupid question.
Answer it.
Shipley's.
Oh, no question, Shipley's. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, Krispy Kreme's like, it's like great when it's hot and fresh.
Shipley's is like Whataburger. It's a Texas tradition, right?
Yeah. Shipley's is awesome.
And then you're going to get the East Coast clowns that want to get Dunkin' Donuts in the mix.
It's not good. It used to, like, it's not the same.
Those same honks also want Dunkin' Donuts coffee in the mix. Which isn't even close to me.
No, I used to have Dunkin' Donuts all the time. I swear it's... But I haven't had it since I moved to Texas. I probably had it like once or twice. It's always Shipley's for me. So the Hall of Fame was this weekend. Andre Johnson obviously will be eligible again next year. Do you think next year is the year that Andre gets in?
I haven't looked at the class.
So the big names, for obviously Reggie Wayne, Torrey Holt are still on there. Devin Hester will be in for consideration. CBS Sports did their top 20 players that are not in that should get in. He was number one. Torrey Holt was two. Ken Anderson was three. Four was Reggie Wayne, and then five was DeMarcus Ware.
Ken Anderson, the former Bengals quarterback?
Yeah.
I was shocked that, was it the Bengals defensive back that got it? Ken Riley?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he had never made an all-pro team, but he was one of the most highly regarded defensive backs for years. So, and we know that there's so much that goes into this that's political, and that the fact these writers have to get into a room and one has to nominate the player, so and then the rest of the writers have to attack them until, you know, someone decides who won and if they get in. I think Andre's due to get in. I think it's kind of like it's a loftier, better credentialed Eli Manning discussion that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah,
where it's a pass-happy league now, more receivers are going to get in. But when you look at, on the flip side of that, when you don't have great quarterbacks for the majority of your career, yet you're able to excel to the level he did.
Yeah, he should be in.
Yeah, you can't hold against him.
It's the touchdown
that numbers. He didn't have quarterback, and his teams didn't, you know, achieve more. He still did his job at a very, very high level where he was constantly being singled out for his accomplishments by the rest of the league. He should get in.
Biggest names next year, I think there's three guys that are surefire to get in. Julius Peppers, number one, Hall of Famer, no question about it.
Is that because he's a Bear?
He's not a Bear. I mean, I guess he is.
He's a Packer, like, too.
Yeah, I guess.
Played great with the
Packers. He's a Panther. Yeah, he played great Panther. For the Bears and the Packers. Like, he had a really awesome career.
Didn't the Texans pass on him?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
For, I don't remember who. David Carr?
I think.
Yeah, David Carr.
Was it?
Yeah, wasn't
Because I saw an art. I read an article recently where they said, what if the Texans had passed on whoever they were going to take to take Julius Peppers, would it have ended differently? I don't know that it would have.
No, I think you're still, I mean, he still would have been a Hall of Fame player. It doesn't change the Texans franchise, I think, that much, you know, as an expansion team. Antonio Gates, Hall of Famer.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Haloti Ngata, I think, will get in. I don't know if he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he was always one of the best interior defensive linemen.
Great run stopper,
yeah. In the NFL. This is a name, and this came through on the text line, too. There's a running back here. Drafted in 2008 by the Kansas City Chiefs, he has five 1,000-yard seasons, only 1 year double-digit touchdowns. I would not consider Jamaal Charles a Hall of Famer.
Oh, me either.
But
me either.
There is an argument, because I think Terrell Davis changed everything. Like, Terrell Davis getting in, like, Jamaal Charles at his peak.
But Terrell Davis won a Super Bowl, and he had, what, the 2,000-yard season? I mean, he had, you know, he did it with a team. He did it with some individual numbers that were really, really, like, recognizable. Jamaal Charles, to me, was an above-average player for a couple of years. Jamaal Charles isn't a Hall of Fame player. Like, the bigger thing to me is when you get down to it, and Dre brought it up on the Twitch, that he believes that Holt and Wayne should get in before Andre. I don't think that's fair to just say that, because Holt and Wayne were the product of a pass-happy NFL where you had Peyton Manning throwing you the football. Whereas I think that Andre was kind of a crossover. He was still kind of old-schoolish offense till he got to more pass-happy. But overall, he also didn't have the same kind of repertoire around him that the Colts did, that guys like Holt did and the guys he's throwing out there, Reggie Wayne. I think Andre is every bit. If you put Andre with Peyton Manning, I think Andre's better statistically than those guys.
Here's my – I don't know if this is fair, because I think both those guys should be in the Hall of Fame.
I think all three will be.
But the reason why, to me, Andre Johnson gets in before Torrey Holt and Reggie Wayne is there is no argument that Andre Johnson was always the best player on his team on offense.
That's true.
Reggie Wayne will be the fourth Colt to get in of that offense. Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison, and Edgerrin James are already Hall of Famers.
Yep, yep.
Now, I think Torrey Holt was better than Isaac Bruce at times, but Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce are already in the Hall of Fame. So, like, he's the fourth guy on that offense from the greatest show on turf to potentially get in. During the best Peyton Manning years, Reggie Wayne is the fourth guy to already get in. And I think that's a lot of the argument against those two guys. Andre Johnson was one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. He just doesn't have the touchdowns.
And that's what I think kills him. I think that's a product of the quarterback and the system.
Absolutely.
More than it should be a knock on him. I think it's unfair to knock him for something that in a lot of ways is out of his control. But what he could control, he did. He got open. He caught the football. He put up great seasons. He had the respect of his peers and the coaches and the general managers in the league. And he did a lot of great things. And again, he didn't overpass it on every play like the Colts were doing when Manning was just slinging it all over the yard. And he had all these guys that were burners getting open where he could just chuck it and duck and you know, connect again and again and again. Like I said, I think all three are worthy of getting in, and they all will. But I think Andre had more obstacles to deal with to do what he did. And yeah, I'm a little biased because I'm in Houston too, but I believe Andre Johnson deserves to be in. To me, I think if I had to like put him in order, I think Andre should be at the top of the list.
Yeah, I'm Andre, Torrey, then Reggie.
And then Torrey Holt. And then Reggie played second fiddle in his entire time to Marvin Harrison too. I think Reggie Wayne's third.
I know I'm bad for I know I'm accused often of having bad takes. So maybe this will
earn them
live in,
like, stripes.
I'll add this one to the list. I'd have Steve Smith and Hans Ward ahead of Reggie Wayne. So, and both those guys are eligible. I guess I'm probably in the minority.
Well, the
of that,
argument in your
like I
in
think
your
both
defense,
those guys are better than him.
Both guys were the man on their team.
I think Steve Smith Jr. is like one of the most underappreciated receivers we've had in the NFL.
You know why?
He's my size.
No. You know why? Because he's an a-hole.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then Hines Ward. I think Hines Ward was better than Reggie Wayne.
A-hole hurts him.
Oh, it definitely does. Because
when you have that rep, look at Terrell Owens.
Because
Terrell Owens,
to...
how do you argue with his statistics and ability-wise? Terrell Owens should have been in maybe unanimously.
That's when the
Hall
of Fame lost its luster.
He was held out because he's an a-hole.
That's when the Hall of Fame lost its luster. Because the fact that they put T.O. in not the first time is an absolute total joke.
Yep.
And the only reason why he wasn't in was because of the old white writers in the room that didn't like T.O. And there is absolutely no denying that that's a fact. The only reason why he didn't get in was because he did sit-ups in his driveway. And, yeah, like, it's an absolute joke. All right, here's Joel Blank. I am Joe George. Coming up next, are you less stressed about the Astros' depth with the way Yordan Alvarez is playing already? That's next year on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Leroy Dragons!
Damn it, Leroy.
Leroy, you are just stupid.
At least I have chicken.